Now joining us from 1010 XL Radio in Jacksonville, First Coast News as well. You can catch him on all the shows in the Jacksonville area on top of College Sports Notebook, doing a great job with interviews and more. Brent Baird joining us. And Brent, I hope all is well. And I also saw your post earlier, too, that it would have been, I believe, your dad's birthday. And I just want to say happy birthday to your dad in heaven. And something that I did notice, and it's something that I know he seemed like a really amazing guy, but he should be proud raising an amazing son.
Well, I appreciate that greatly. Dan's been gone now for he was 81 when he died, so he's been gone for about 8 years. We certainly miss him, but he's certainly doing better than all of us put together right now, too. So we are grateful for that. We'd all love to have him back, but the condition he was in at the end, he's so much better off. But I appreciate that greatly.
Well, absolutely. And I know while we're on this topic as well, and I don't mean to continue to talk about it, but Cecil Hurt, we never got a chance to talk about it in person. Yeah. I know he meant a lot. And, somebody that's been a staple of the Alabama Crimson Tide community when it comes to really covering SEC sports.
Well, I appreciate you mentioning that, too. One of my fondest memories of Cecil happened after the Alabama-Florida game. He was there, and my friend and I, Travis Ryer, who do a podcast together called Second Helpings, it was raining cats and dogs after the game, and he gave us a ride to our car back to the media parking lot when he did not have to do so, but we were quite grateful, to say the least. And that was kind of the person that he was. Just an incredible writer in so many ways. It would have been fascinating to see what he would have done with the story on the Iron Bowl from Saturday night. But certainly he will be severely missed, too. Just an absolute institution in the state of Alabama.
Well, let's talk about something that obviously is on a lot of people's minds in your area, Billy Napier coming over to Florida. I think it's a name where he's only had success. He's done a lot at Louisiana Lafayette. Last time I checked, I believe he was 38-12 as a head coach. And Lafayette wasn't one of these schools when he took over that was the juggernaut of the Sun Belt. They were good, but they were just like a lot of the teams, like Arkansas State and others. Well, you look right now and, you see Lincoln Riley going to USC. There's still some other big names out there. But what did you think when you first heard the hiring?
Well, I followed him for years when he was at Alabama and Clemson, and just did an incredible job at both places. This was a guy that you could tell was going up the coaching ladder and was going to be very good. So it was a good hire that could end up being a really good hire before it's over. He's a program builder, not a quick fix. They've had four coaches in 8 years. That's got to stop. In the last 3 years, to dovetail what you said, he's been 32-5. His model is program after Nick Saban and Dabo Sweeney, which frankly is a smart thing to do. And people may forget or not even realize he was involved last year or over the last few years in the Auburn, Mississippi State, South Carolina, and Baylor openings. An elite recruiter that Florida needs desperately. And how about this, Chad? It comes in with some humility. Said he learned a lot from being fired at Clemson. Now, he's probably not going to win the press conference, but they don't need to worry about that. All they need to do is salvage a signing class, hire a staff, and I think improve upon his relationship with fans and media. But all in all, I think it has great promise for Florida.
Well, and I think, Brent, it's interesting now that, like, the state of the Florida Gators, as opposed to maybe like 5 years ago, where maybe a hiring like Billy Napier wouldn't make too much sense. Now it's like, this is an up and coming coach. He's built his program in the in the way that, you know, Nick Saban and Dabo has, as you said. In terms of, I guess, the overall expectations for him in the next couple of years, do you think that, you know, the expectations for him maybe run along the same line as Brian Harsin at Auburn? Or I guess what do you think would be the expectation for him this first season and then, you know, maybe in a year or two?
Oh, I think probably at least two. It's going to take him a good 2 or 3 years to rebuild that Florida roster. And look, I'm not saying it's devoid of talent, but I am saying that, it's going to he's probably going to lose some battles in the beginning in recruiting, but he is extremely organized. Some of the guys that he's recruited over time, I mean, particularly Alabama, has been very impressive when he was there. So, but I think this is a guy that I'm not going to go as far as saying he's the opposite of what they had, but I think where Mullen missed in some areas, that this is a guy who could get it right for Florida. Unlike Muschamp or McElwain or Mullen or Zook, I really do think that this guy could be their best hire in quite a while.
You know, and I think a lot of times, Brent, we spent so much time over the years talking about Florida, Florida State, the way that we're talking about Alabama, Auburn, and also Michigan, Ohio State this week, but it seems like so many people were just like, just breezing by it because it was just like somebody had to win it. But, you know, what do you think that game ultimately did for Florida winning that? And also Mike Norvell, they really wanted to get that bowl game. We were watching it. It looked like the type of game that we expected. It wasn't one of these flashy, a lot of touchdowns, real exciting. It just somebody had to win. Florida, though, looked like the better team. But we sort of knew that they had a better roster, even though they were down. Did anybody win anything from this game?
Well, it was a pillow fight is what it was.
Very, very fluffy fight. Pillows. Very the ones with the tassels on the end, the very fluffy ones. Yeah, exactly.
the game featured 22 penalties for 196 yards. And that tells you that there was that's certainly something that needs to be changed for these teams. But you had the same inconsistencies for Florida with Emory Jones throwing three picks, which was ridiculous. They have yet to figure out there, and I think Billy Napier will, what to do with Anthony Richardson. Of course, he's going to have to talk him into staying, and I think he will. Now, again, it will help Florida's younger players by being in a bowl. It'll keep some interest in the fan base by having the 15 practices to help the team. And I thought both teams played hard, frankly. FSU just has to have some players, or certainly more than they've got now. Now, I think the other thing that had happened with FSU, and I give them credit for it, Mike Norvell was out recruiting like yesterday, Sunday morning at 6 o'clock. So credit to him for that to happen. And I do think they made progress. I think he is a really good coach for them, guys. And the good thing is I think we'll see vast improvements for both these programs over the next few years.
So if with all this craziness with Oklahoma, if Caleb Williams decides to enter the portal, do you think Billy Napier goes after him, or do you think he's content in trying to keep Anthony Richardson?
Well, I think he wants Richardson, and I think he can probably build a program after him if he gets if he's able to basically keep him from making mistakes. I mean, Richardson's a risk reward guy. He'll throw two picks, but he may throw four interceptions. And obviously, they'll keep the guys that they've got right now at quarterback. But so you go back to things that, and this is not just to pile on Mullen here, but what they did or maybe better didn't do with Damian Pierce is almost criminal. To have a guy that runs as well as he does, and everybody see that this guy needed double-digit carries in every game and basically never got it. So I think that those are things they look at immediately in order to help them and to be able to get going and for that offense to look much better than it did this season.
Well, yeah, I think it's one where they can definitely improve, and they will. And right now, the East, as we know, you know, Georgia's got that, you know, everything working. But at the same time, you know, Tennessee, until they get a defense, I don't think people are going to be too high on Josh Heupel making the next jump. And Kentucky, they're pretty much exactly where they are. They're a team that wins some games. They lose some easy games, too. And, you know, they should never be ahead of Florida. So I think this is where it's at right now, and they have a good chance. And Billy Napier, I think, saw that compared to taking the LSU job, which you're working with at this point. You were, even after the win against Texas A&M, they were seventh out of seven teams. And that's a long climb when you got a lot of good coaches ahead of you. And some of those being guys that you look up to in Nick Saban. So, Coach, I mean, Brent, that's 2 weeks in a row I've called you Coach here. We're just going to add on this here. Coach, you know, when it comes down to the Iron Bowl, what did you see? And I know that Alabama just needed to get there, but there's just a different feel of getting there this week. They're a 6.5-point underdog going into the title game, but there's a different feel to that team right now compared to some of the others.
Well, this is a mini flawed team. It is an immature team. They're still 11-1. And I would argue probably that you've got a situation here where Nick Saban basically grabbed them by the nape of the neck and led them to Atlanta. And I think he realizes this, and they could, frankly, they could be either undefeated, or this is a team that could have had about four losses in them, but I don't see them beating Georgia. Now, stranger things have happened, and they are actually the underdog this week, and that is unusual for them. That'll be great motivation for this football team, but it comes down to blocking and tackling. And can Alabama protect Bryce Young long enough, and can Bryce Young, when he's got time, be able to hit these receivers against what I think is frankly a susceptible secondary for Georgia? And can Alabama's offensive line be able to at least open up a little bit of holes for Alabama to run through? So that to me is the challenge. And I think what you're saying is this is more of a finesse team. It's not a team that lowers its shoulder and just runs you over like they've done in the past. And I think that's something they need to look at. The problems they've got are not going to be fixed overnight or this week, frankly. But I mean, could they win? Yeah, I think that is possible, because no one's been able to push and stress Georgia the way that Auburn did Alabama, and to be able to see how they would hold up under that if Bama's able to get it that far.
Well, yeah, I think that, you know, the offensive line, if they can protect Bryce, then that gives them a legitimate. You know, I think it gives him a chance. Now, I'm going to dig down a little bit of a rabbit hole, Brent, so I apologize. But if Alabama beats Georgia and Georgia has one loss, if Oklahoma State wins the Big 12 title game and they beat Baylor, you could argue, I think, that Oklahoma State in totality had a tougher road to get to the Big 12 title game, and that they're a conference champion. Just having one loss could very well you know, be ahead of Georgia in the playoff. Is there any chance that that happens under the sun, or is Georgia in no matter what?
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. I mean, if Bama can win the game 45-3 and Georgia still be in the game, I don't have any doubt about that, because the committee is going to look on Georgia, and they probably should, as the dominant team in America this year, the most consistent team in America. That's the difference, all in all. So because of that, even at one, Georgia's not moving very far, even with a loss. So, yes, I mean, let me put it like this. If Bama won, if Bama's two tomorrow night, what you may have is, even with a Georgia loss, I think all they would do would be just to swap, and Bama might be one and Georgia might be two, or Georgia may go as four as three, but I don't think there's any way in the world that committee's moving them any more than that.
So I guess my last question is, there's rumblings right now that Venables could be going to Oklahoma. There is also rumblings that LSU is seriously pursuing Brian Kelly from Notre Dame. What would be your reaction to if those two hires actually happened, in terms of Oklahoma, you know, eventually moving to the SEC, and then LSU looking to carry on and get back to contending for a national title?
Venables has done a great job. I don't know how Oklahoma fans would take him coming and not being a head coach and not having that experience. I've also heard that for both LSU, Mark Stoops could be a backup candidate for both Oklahoma and LSU, is a possibility. I mean, Brian Kelly, again, when you can break Newt Rockne's record at Notre Dame, I mean, you've done something well. And again, we don't know if this is agent stuff, frankly, and what that might mean. So all in all, this coaching stuff has always been fascinating. I mean, I've loved following it over the years. But, I mean, for both of these, both blue blood jobs like this, it almost depends on the hour you look at Twitter is what it amounts to. But I think for both of them, you've got this, this time limit almost of where early signing period, guys, is basically 2 weeks away, and those 2 weeks away will be here very quickly. So that's forcing these athletic directors to make moves quicker than they think. And I don't know if it's true or not, but, I mean, seeing numbers – put out for these coaches, like for the Southern Cal situation with Riley, of $110 million, $95 million in a situation for Mel Tucker. In this economy and what people, guys, do just to live from day to day. I mean, the numbers are just absolutely obscene, aren't they?
It's insane. And they're getting paid too. And it's a job that most people think, if they, you know, if they study, they got the right opportunities, they actually physically could do in life. Like if Drew and I, even at our ages now, and I'm just branching him in with me 10 years later, but at the same time, like if we just did nothing but study college football and get the right chance and learn as a grad assistant and work our way up, you actually can do that. I mean, guys like Hugh Freeze and Gus Malzahn were coaching at high school in Alabama not too long ago. But the difference is, you know, you look at other guys like what Tom Brady does, or, you know, somebody like a Derrick Henry and things like that, And it just looks like, okay, we do have Alex Grinch is the new defensive coordinator over at USC. So they are building their program now here. But the and we'll get to that too, Dennis Dodd reporting that. But when it comes down to it, Brent, it just seems like for a job that most of us could actually physically do, you don't expect to get paid that. We usually pay actors or actresses or athletes that have freak abilities that kind of money. Yeah. And you got Mel Tucker walking in there, and he's 15-15 as a head coach all time, and he's got $95 million. So I mean, good for him, but you know, it's where we are at life. But hey, Brent. We got to take a break. We appreciate your time as always and looking forward to doing this again next Monday as an SEC champion will be named.
That's right. Me too, guys. Take care.